currently now, my wife, she is also from Savannah. Her name is Rachel. We live just a little bit north of Atlanta, and we own a photography studio that we just took over in January. So we've been really busy with that. And always, you know, always been making music, you know, probably since I was about 16 or 17, probably more serious in the last couple of years, maybe 5-10 years, and always been doing photography as well. So.
And as something of an introduction to your Savannah experience, you have written, well, now two novels, but
yep.
But your first novel was called Savannah Blue.
Yeah, well, yeah, actually the second novel I wrote was Savannah Blue, and that was probably more like a true novel. The first one was kind of somewhere between a novel and a graphic novel.
That one is. I wondered. It was a little shorter.
Yeah, much shorter. And then, Savannah Blue came out almost exactly a year ago, and had a great time writing it. It was really fun. Got a lot of really positive feedback, and just been enjoying everything about it.
Okay, great. Now, Savannah Blue is based at least partially on your high school experience, which was at...
Yeah, it was. I went to high school at Benedictine, and I would say I kind of took 4 years, a lot of different experiences happened to me, and kind of put them on a one-year timeline.
Right.
So all the stories in there definitely happened to me. I wouldn't say much exaggeration. The only exaggeration would be just to fit it onto the timeline, for the most part. And with the characters, I kind of consolidated a lot of people and made them maybe into one character, one archetype, that sort of thing.
That's always a very comforting thing to do when it comes to legal matters.
Yes, definitely. So it's easier to kind of, if anything, it was, simplified. You know, a lot of things were maybe even toned down just to kind of, I don't want to embarrass anybody or, do anything like that. And then it was just a book to kind of document a certain part in my life that I've lived through an era. And I just had fun doing it. And it was one of the things I always wanted to do. And then I just, one day just sat down and started working on it every day for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Mm-hmm. So you... went to Benedictine. Mm-hmm. I know that you were pretty active in sports.
Yep. Yeah. So I swam. I played football. I played baseball. I was always doing something.
Right. And yet, with all this, this was the same period when you started a lot of your creative endeavors. Mm-hmm. You told me that you started music in your mid-teens.
Yeah, I definitely always was writing music, always, idolized musicians and always wanted to do that. I just thought that, I think my dad, he was an incredible guitar player and I always looked up, he had the best taste in music and everything. So whenever I was in high school, I just, kind of looked up to him and as well as all the other people like him.
Right.
In that style and genre of music. So he still does have good taste. So.
Okay, well, good. And then your writing... obviously took kind of a professional edge at the time. And how did you get started with photography?
Well, actually, it's all kind of tied with music. So I loved like Pink Floyd album covers and Led Zeppelin album covers.
Right.
I was just, as a kid, I would just look at them and collect them. I had records everywhere, really just for the album art. And
then, right.
So whenever I started playing music and writing my own music, I started making album covers for myself and then started working with a lot of other musicians who liked the style that I had at the time. And at first it started out for maybe just a necessity, like I need to get this out there. And I could, with the internet, you could do a lot more things where you could, be
a photographer
yourself, upload, you needed artwork. And that was a project that, nothing was pressing. I had enough time to do whatever I wanted to and the resources to do it. So it's just fun to learn. And then I got into that. And then I had a lot of bands, a lot of Statesboro bands too at the time and Savannah bands. I was working with them, doing their album covers, recording their studio sessions. And that's how I started in the studio too with music. Because, there always seems like it's impossible to get in the studio and record your songs. It's going to be hundreds and hundreds of dollars. There seems like a lot of pressure at the time. And then when I started seeing other musicians go in and how they were recording and, I was like, hey, I can do this, and I did, but it took me a few sessions to sit down on other musicians. And you never kind of think you're good enough. I think especially when you're younger and you see a lot of other people in the studio doing things, and then financially and everything, but I think at the time, when I was doing that, I was also waiting tables. So I was, waiting tables, working extra shifts just so I could go to the studio. And there was a studio right down the street from here, actually, about a mile, and it's on just Industrial Drive, I believe. If you go past Liberty, it turns into Louisville, and you take a right, Dollhouse Studio, which actually I still work with Peter Mavrogiorgis, who owned the studio. He's in Atlanta now. Uh-huh. So I still work uh-huh. with Peter a lot. But yeah, that was really inspiring me for at the time to photograph bands, be a part of their artwork, and then see how they're making. I could learn a lot from a lot of musicians, which I've kind of carried that with me today. So they're all kind of intertwined. And then now that led me to just a career path of just, we're mostly a studio, a portrait studio. We do a lot of families, we work with a lot of schools. And I've kind of carried that over to, you know, everyday more commercial work, which has been great for me and my wife as well.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So you started a lot of this in high school, carried over to college.
I think the seeds were always there in high school. I was definitely, you know, always, that's what I wanted to do. And mm-hmm. I say putting it into action, probably like right when I was in college, freshman, sophomore, you know, junior year of college, I was at Georgia Southern kind of commuting back and forth from Savannah. And that's where a lot of those things kind of, you know, I saw like how to get the, you know, the means to the end. Like, how do I make this happen?
Right, mm-hmm. right. That's a good characteristic to have, even in creatives. Matter of fact, it's kind of necessary.
Yeah, definitely.
You went to Georgia Southern, I presume, the Statesboro campus.
Yes, I did. Yeah, but I think that was before they have Armstrong, you know, kind of acquired Armstrong.
Right. Mm-hmm. And did that have any particular impact on you besides giving you an opportunity to...
Yeah, I had a really great teacher, Jessica Hines, and she just kind of opened my world up, especially with photography and even just with life. I mean, a lot of the exercise she had us do, even the techniques and stuff have carried over. I think about probably just certain things, especially I help a lot of people with photography, and I think about exercises she gave me that made me think about it differently, not maybe just from a technical aspect, but more from how do I convey this person's ideas. And that was really helpful. Like, if you came to me and said you wanted a certain photograph to portray a certain thing, you know, she taught me how to kind of explore that and how to work with people and encourage that. So, and even just exercises, I mean, small exercises when we first started, I didn't even know I wanted to do photography as a career then. She would just say, you know, like, go out and just photograph 200 pictures a day, you know, and it seems kind of like, why am I doing this? You know, and she made us do that every single day, and we'd go through, and then we had to categorize everything that we did into certain groups, and then write about each category. And then she's at the end of, you know, a long period, she said, this is everything you're interested in. And it was, when I looked at all these arbitrary things, I said, well, I never really thought about that, you know? And then mm-hmm. if you just get a camera and you have to do something, even if it feels like you're just doing it to get it done with, you kind of see what's important to you, whether it's like your family you're photographing or, you know, just different. And it's more than photography. It's just life in general. Like, what are you interested in? And a lot of times when you're 22 years old or 19 years, you don't know what you're interested in. So that was kind of helpful
still,
for life too. You
still
know?
Too many possibilities.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Not regarding photography, but regarding art.
Mm-hmm.
I saw an article that I'm not sure I agree with, but anyway, it's an interesting point. The article said that lately, while there has been a proliferation of portraits,
mm-hmm.
There haven't been as many great ones. And the article said that the reason for that is back in the day, let's say John Singer Sargent, the painter painted what he saw, his impression, mm-hmm. so forth and so on. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, people do just exactly what you said. Mm-hmm. They kind of divine out, figure out, or discuss what the person in the portrait wants to conveyed. I'm sure you do things based on your own impressions.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen some of your more artistic work, and mm-hmm. and I'm positive of it. Are you ever in a situation where you're kind of given your own head to do a portrait, or is that something you kind of try to avoid?
Well, I would say most of the work I'm doing now, it's kind of cut and dry, and it's more physical. I'm looking at what you know, what do the people want, and then what are their best attributes, you know, and then it almost is a formula, and it's really just making people feel comfortable and then getting those people aligned, you know, and there's certain angles that are always look good. So most of the people coming in are families, you know, and, you know, there's a certain way to pose certain people based on their body type, size, things like that. I wouldn't say those are as artistic. And most of the people, they just want to, you know, they want their family together with them. They want to look happy, or if they're, you know, doing a headshot for a corporation.
Sure.
There's certain things like that, and that is more just very technical, I believe. It's technical, and then you have to put your personality into it, you know, and, you know, you kind of know what those people want. But I do still work with bands a lot, and a lot of that is open up to interpretation. They'll come into the studio, and they might have an idea, but their idea either might not, you know, might overlap with a couple other things that, you know, might conflict, you know, how they look, or, you know, what the expectation versus reality. And I've never had a project go bad, you know, where I didn't come up with something and people weren't happy, which is great. But how hard you work to get to that level.
That's very hard to get to.
I've done projects where I've brought in, I built like an 8-foot, 10-foot tall mirror, but it weighed a couple hundred pounds into the middle of the forest. And we, like, you know, did all this mirror work for this album cover. It turned out great. But if I had to go back and do it again, you know, that was a lot of work, you know, to get that one shot. And then I've always been lucky. I've had a lot of people to help me too. Actually, I'm one of 10. I have 9 brothers and sisters. So all the younger ones, I would have them as like my caddies, helping me carry all the equipment which was kind of funny when I look back at a lot of those older photographs that I took. All the other behind the scenes stuff is always, you know, just funny to look back on. But yeah, I mean, for the most part, it's just working with people, kind of finding out what do they want, and then, you know, what, you know, you don't really know what you want sometimes until you see it, you know. So kind of taking what they want, doing what they want first, and then showing them what you think. And letting them choose. And that doesn't always work. Sometimes they choose. You give them 3 photos and you think the 2 that you like are the best ones, and you put just a bad one that they kind of told you in the middle, like maybe you want to do that one, and they pick that one. You know, but if they're happy, then, you know, that's all that matters. That's why they're calling.
Right.
So.
You also do artistic photography.
Mm-hmm.
Where you're coming up with, well, I would say that you're coming up with a story.
Exactly,
and,
yeah.
And you do a certain amount of landscapes as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where somebody else's ideas don't necessarily factor in as heavily.
Yeah, so those, I would say those, most of those, especially the ones on my website, are mostly just for me. You know, those are ideas that I have, maybe short stories that I wrote. They're kind of illustrations of thoughts that I've had.
Right.
And I've had other people, you know, maybe just ask, you know, hey, I really like what you did on the beach. Can you do something like that for me? And then that's how some music album covers I worked on for people have kind of came about. But for the most part, yeah, those were just me kind of emulating album covers either for me or for stories I was writing, or maybe it was better as a photograph than it was a short story, you know, kind of how I structured a lot of those.
So this is very, very significantly part of that creative process. And mm-hmm. It's interesting to me that your creative approach, you approach things from a literature point of view, you approach the same idea from a musical point of view, perhaps from a photographic point mm-hmm. of view, all of which indicates that this is an idea that you've really gotten into.
Yeah, definitely. And sometimes something might start off as a song and ends up as a photograph, you know, or vice versa. And to just a lot with the photograph too started. I love going through, and my wife does too, just looking, antiquing. Sometimes I find an object that kind of tells a story too, and then I'll save it and I'll have it in our house for 2 years in our garage or something. And then finally something will come out. Somebody will ask me to do a project, or I'll be working on something and think like, you know, that farm equipment from 1800s would look great in this photo, you know,
right,
and sometimes
right,
it doesn't
right.
pan out and I have a lot of stuff I need to get rid of, but mostly I can find everything.
We all do.
And same with writing. I mean, a lot of times my wife will say, well, what does that line mean or something? But it might be a line I borrowed from when I wrote when I was 17 years old. I have all these journals saved where I can save bits and pieces, and I kind of organize them either maybe by story, but also by more mood. You know, what is the story? What is the over theme, you know, overarching theme of that? So I just have a lot of things kind of scattered but organized, you know, where I can kind of pull from them. And sometimes you put it away, look at it again 5 years later, and that's the missing line you need, you know, in your song. So,
exactly, exactly. Yeah. I have a friend who's engaged in a large-scale project, just that. He's been saving these ideas and thoughts and so forth for years and years, and now he's finally getting around to publishing some of them.
Yeah, that's a good feeling.
Some pretty good stuff there. Some pretty good stuff there. This is something you've been doing, kind of triple tracking, if you will, for your entire life, or at least most of it. Now you have a business, you have a wife, you have a house. You're coming to grips, or you have come to grips with the things that move all of us. How has that changed your creative ideas, or has it?
Well, I would say now I'm doing everything for me, which maybe in the past I might not have been doing. So I would say creatively, you know, I was trying to maybe break into the industry as a musician or, you know, certain things. So I would be maybe influenced by other people or what's popular at the moment. Or I think I tried to be a lot more epic when I was younger, you know, or a lot more dramatic. And, you know,
right.
And I don't have maybe the best singing voice, but I tried to maybe like impress people with the words I was saying, or, you know, and it kind of pushed me in a different direction. And then now I just have a lot more time, and I don't have as much anxiety, not enough worries, you know, so it's just purely driven by my own fascination, my own interest, which is a good place to be, where
absolutely.
I don't have to make amends to it. You know, I can do something creative every day for work, and I love that, but there's no pressure, like, I have to, you know, like, have a song to pay my bill next week, or, you know, something like that, you know.
Right,
like, there's no external pressures to be creative, or to be, I guess you worry about, too, about... just being relevant, I guess, you know, or being respected as an artist or musician, especially when you first start out, or if you're younger, kind of coming into your craft. I don't have any of those fears at all. I don't really care what anybody thinks. So that's a freeing in a way, you know, for me at least.
Right. And so often that is the beginning of a really vibrant artistic life. It's when you're pleasing yourself and not pleasing somebody else.
Exactly.
That it all works out, and so many artists, and that includes musicians and writers too, come up against that whole thing of, yes, I have this great idea I have to work on, but the rent's due on Friday,
so
I have to do something else.
Well, I would say when I was in school, and pretty much my whole life, whenever you're studying a poet or somebody, everything's so depressing and sad. When you're reading a lot of these great poets, and you know that is a lot of life. But I think when you're younger, I was very impressionable, and I noticed a big change in my music is, I felt like I had to write something depressing and moving, or just something where, you know, really, just sad. You know, a lot of times, when I was writing poetry when I was younger, and then now my stuff is much more happy. You know, and I'm happier doing that too. But I think you just feel like you have to write something so epic or so make somebody think in a, you know, such a way, you know, where you can get some emotion. And for me, it was always easier to write something sad to get somebody's emotion, or something sad is maybe more important or more attention to it. Whereas now I think that changed. I mean, my perspective on music and art and a lot of stuff has changed, where I do believe music and art, you know, is a portal, you know, and I don't want to kind of take somebody to a sad place. So a lot of the later projects I'm working on, a lot happier, you know, and I think it's just my life. I'm a lot happier in my life too. So those all kind of go together.
All that helps, yeah. I think younger people tend to think in more overall philosophical terms, and when you stop thinking about life and start living it,
exactly,
it changes your
Well, and that's school day, too. It's all, you know, in school it was very philosophical, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what you're supposed to do.
So I'm glad I had it, but, you know, I'm glad I'm done.
Well, anyway, we have some interesting and informative messages for people, and I think we will do that now, and we will be right back with Harrison Simons.
All right, thank you.
And we are back, and we are talking with Harrison Simons, who is who has integrated a whole lot of creativity into his works. He's integrated photography. He's integrated a form of literature. He's also integrated some music and all of these things. He's been talented and fortunate enough to pursue, even though he's now off launched on a career. Harrison, I want to talk a little bit about Savannah Blue.
Yeah, sure.
What prompted you to decide to put this out as a book?
Yeah, I guess it needed to be a book. I mean, it couldn't be a song. It couldn't be anything else.
Too complicated.
And, I mean, there's a lot of other themes. And, you know, for the most part, it's just a collection of short stories that are just kind of funny. You know, for anything, just for me and my friends, who are people who've gone, you know, have similar experience where there's a lot of people who have. And that's how it kind of started. It's just to have fun with it. But, you know, you notice themes when you start writing, especially something long format, and you kind of work upon those themes. So there was some ideas that I wanted to get through. A lot about how we communicate with people and how we used to communicate with people, and not necessarily making a stance whether it's right or wrong, but it was just different. You know, when I wrote that book about 2007 to 2011 is where the time frame of the book is. That was when Facebook first came out. Like, people had it, but we don't use it like we use it today. I had cell phones, but I think I shared one with my mom. You know, it wasn't like I was on it all day long texting mm-hmm. people. We didn't even have internet on our phone. I think the iPhone came out my junior year of high school. So, you know, those were not important things. But, you know, all those things are recording devices, you know, where you act differently if you're being recorded. You know, we weren't kind of governed by these technologies. And I noticed when I work with a lot of schools, these high school kids and, you know, a lot of middle schools, you know, they act differently than I did, you know. And it's not better or not worse. It's just a different environment.
Sure.
And then kind of before that time was lost, I just wanted to kind of document just how we interacted, how my friends and I interacted with each other, how the world kind of was, to me at least. It might be romanticized, or, you know, looking back, it might be different, but that's how I remember it being, you know, and I wanted to kind of get that done and document for me and also other people who have the similar experience, you know.
So based on the high school time of life, this would be your personal Breakfast Club or something
exactly. And I think it's everybody who went to high school during that time period and before, they had a different experience than today, but especially going through that and also an all-boys school is a lot different, you know. So
right.
I think kind of honing in on that, and kind of I've had a lot of people who've gone to other all-boys school, you know, they've had very similar experiences. You know, people write into me and, you know, say that I try to make universal stories. So a lot mm-hmm. of stories that might mm-hmm. be great for me, but I thought, like, you know, what if somebody in North Carolina or somebody in California, you know, what would something that they would resonate with who had the similar experience? So I had hundreds of stories. I just made a giant list of all of them, and kind of how I narrowed it down was that universal, you know, experience that even if you didn't even go to the school, you can kind of understand, you know, or you could laugh, or you could, you know, experience and imagine.
Absolutely.
It, you know, so.
Absolutely. Even... Even when the hero goes through some atypical experiences, shall we say?
Oh yeah.
people can still relate to. I mean, mm-hmm. that's been a part of that sort of literature. I'm probably starting with Catcher in the Rye.
Yeah, something very similar to that. Yeah, and you just understand them, you know, and it's very honest, maybe even awkward, you know, but that's how everybody is when they're younger. So it's very humanizing, you know,
sure.
Almost like you're reading someone's diary, you know, and it includes the good and the bad, you know, it's not just a highlight reel.
Absolutely.
It's humbling, I guess.
Well, a little bit if you take it personally, but then you realize that everybody has a variation of that.
So. Yes, they do.
You've talked to me twice now about this. You feel that the current world is far more technology dependent.
Yeah, I would definitely say. I mean, especially even now more than ever with all the AI. Everybody's using AI for everything. So definitely. And then, in a way it's good because, I mean, like, I haven't heard anybody getting broken into in forever. I mean, people are governed by technology where I don't have to worry about my mail getting stolen off my porch like I used to. I used to have, we used to live in Mayfair, not far from here. It's a great neighborhood, but everybody I knew got broken into. My neighbors, my wife actually grew up in the same neighborhood. Her family got broken into. And that doesn't happen anymore, you know, with the cameras, with the technology.
Right.
So there are some great things about it. But yeah, I do think with being reliant on technology, it just changes how we interact with each other. I mean, it's not that we don't have to trust people as much, in a sense that we have them on camera, you know, so you don't have to.
Right.
And you can track people
down. You're not completely oblivious to who a person is.
Yeah, and it's not that they can move to a different state and start a new life or anything, you
right.
know, to that extent. And then also, you know, and it might change how sincere we are, though, you know, because you might act differently, you know, if you know that you're being recorded or that you could be, you know, someone could write about you on the internet. You have this public forum that kind of you want to fit those guidelines, which is a little different than before.
It's an interesting bag, isn't it? Because there's that, but then there are the people who blast out on social media things that they would never say to other people face to face.
Yeah, it's a weird. Yeah, I definitely see that side of it.
So the increasing reliance on technology, where you're concerned, is kind of a mixed bag. It's neither a good thing nor a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, I romanticize a time without technology, but you know, I think it's good and bad. You know, there are some great things about it. You know, with the phones, with the surveillance, you know, there is good things, but there's a lack of sincerity, I think, with a lot of things of how people, and this idea that you can create your own image, kind of like Gary's saying, people would say things they would never say online, but they can also live a way they never live in real life, too.
Oh, you know, absolutely. Yeah, everybody has a platform, and sometimes the platform is more window dressing than actual.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Okay. I looked at your website, and this would be a good time for you to mention your website.
So my website is www.choir9.com.
Why Choir 9?
That's the name of my band. I still have it now, but it's more of just like a collection of photography. A lot of more of my it's more of my creative stuff because I have one separate for our business, but that's more for the creative. Photos, music, books, everything.
Okay. And you can sample a little bit of everything that Harrison does on that site. it's interesting. One of the things that I thought was so unique is I have seen scores for movies, I have seen scores for plays. I've never seen scores for novels before, and you have done that.
Yeah.
For both of your books, isn't
it? Yeah. Yeah. So actually, it just for me, at least, how my workflow is, it just made the most sense because you have, you know, like you're writing a chapter, and it might take you weeks to write one chapter, but it also
sure.
kind of puts you into a mood. There's certain things you want to say, and you can kind of. You know, you have the story and the dialogue and everything else, but there's those overarching themes that you really want to highlight. And a lot of those inspired songs that I was making, you know, so.
I just thought about how I might approach. Do you think that helps you focus or?
I think it does. And sometimes it's an escape from the work that I'm doing. It might help me see it in a different way. So I might be struggling with a chapter, but then, you know, kind of translating into music and then bringing it back into the chapter kind of helped me finish a lot of the music. So.
Right.
And I think, you know, they stand alone as songs, and then you might not even put two and two together. It might be more of like a mood or an atmosphere, but a lot of them kind of go hand in hand and are, you know, you can listen and go, okay, I know exactly
mm-hmm.
where that, almost
mm-hmm.
like the book I almost see is like a movie, you know, it's very visual, and I almost seem like that's the soundtrack for the movie, which is a book, you know, if that makes any sense.
Right. Your first book, which was called Church on Fire, you told me is kind of a graphic novel.
Yeah, so that one is, each chapter has about three or four illustrations per chapter, and then sometimes more, and then the songs directly related for each chapter, you know, and that one was more of like a, I don't know if I call it a horror, it was kind of like a comedy, maybe horror elements, it wasn't, I wouldn't say like violent or anything like that. But more like a psychological thriller.
Right. You have a purpose section
mm-hmm.
in your website, and I'd like to talk to you a little bit about some of the statements
yeah,
that
sure.
I see there. It starts by saying, high culture is gradually becoming nothing more than a memory as we abruptly transition to an age in which commercial speech is rapidly becoming the universal tongue. Mm-hmm. High culture is gradually becoming nothing more than a memory. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think at the time when I wrote that, it's more so, I mean, just how people communicate kind of back to that, you know. We don't, like we were saying before we started this radio show, how people used to paint portraits and, you know, things like that. People don't put that much time or effort into a lot of things. They don't put much of this time into their writing. Everything has been kind of abbreviated. How people text each other and how people talk, is everything's been abbreviated. So, you know, that is a dramatic statement on my website. You know? But I think I was hyper focused on it, a lot more angsty when I put that out there. But I still think it kind of holds up, where a lot of stuff in art and how people treat art has been kind of very simplified. I mean, if you just look at, and maybe not everybody feels that way, but if you look at like the Renaissance period or Baroque period and look at all the details and the paintings and how beautiful they are, everybody can look at that and go, that's beautiful. A lot of stuff, most art now, I don't think so. You know, for not everybody, but a lot of it, you know. The ones
no,
that are
I see where you're coming from, mm-hmm. and I largely agree with you. Part of it is that the technology that we were mentioning, mm-hmm. Has become part of what you need to do.
Yeah, to survive and go
to work. To survive and to create.
Uh-huh.
And the time and effort you put into that, mm-hmm. Never shows up in the product.
Yep, exactly.
It's part of the platform. It's not part of the content. Mm-hmm. For example, I know a number of teachers and professors and so forth who spend an enormous amount of time getting stuff ready on the net, mm-hmm. So their students can read it or watch it or whatever mm-hmm. they're doing. And they're spending a significant amount of time on that. It never shows up in class. It never shows up in
evaluation. Yeah, and you never think about it either.
You never think about it. And now mm-hmm. that's becoming a part of just about every profession.
Yeah, that is very true.
You say in an age where commercial speech is rapidly becoming the universal tongue.
Mm-hmm.
Going back to something we talked about before, mm-hmm. Not only do we have people who just blurt things out on social media that they'd mm-hmm. never say to a person face-to-face, but that too has become commercialized.
Yes.
So that makes a whole lot of sense to me. There is still non-commercial speech, there's still elegant language,
the sort of thing
you talk, but it's just become harder to find in this glut of commercial slash emotional stuff that we have to go through.
Maybe you want to, you know, just something you can pass on to the future, you know, and we did that through collecting.
Okay. You also make reference in that statement to earthly purgatory.
Mm-hmm.
Has your opinion on that
evolved
a little
bit?
Yeah,
I think I wrote this was much younger. I think I was angsty. I was trying to get something edgy out there.
Right.
And I think maybe at the time I probably was living in earthly purgatory. I mean, it's really hard to be, you know, 23, 24, 25 years old, not have the job you want, be working really hard. And trying to make a name for yourself. I think
Absolutely.
If you do that with all those pressures, you know, you are dramatic and you're trying to be somebody you're not. And now I'm much happier, you know, so I don't know if I would call it an earthly purgatory now, for sure. I definitely wouldn't, but
yeah.
But I think in the way I was trying to, I don't think I was trying to make it more of a hell or like more of an in-between, you know, so not necessarily like a heaven or hell. It was just kind of this in-between phase that we're stuck in a lot of times.
As you pointed out, especially at that mm-hmm. phase of life, it's very easy to get very discouraged because you're at the bottom of everything, and it takes a little time, a little getting used to your situation, and a little being able to manipulate it until you can get it more to your own taste.
Yeah, and I think more like the earthly purgatory is more of like before, when we talked about living in the future. Not necessarily like you need to live in the future, but more about being in the present. And then, you know, and then more so being, we don't live necessarily in the moment, you know, where everybody knows they're going to die. Every culture, they all, you know, live a certain way. But I think we're hyper-focused on the future a lot of times. And I think that still holds true, you know, where a lot of times we forget what's happening right now. You know, most people do, especially with all the distractions bringing us back to technology. You know, it's a lot easier to be on your phone all the time and just let everything pass by. So,
do you think that that particular characteristic is more of an American trait, or do you think that's humanity overall?
I think anybody given the opportunity would probably do the same thing. You know, like society wise,
given enough time and leisure,
I mean, I know a lot of people from other countries, and then. You know, especially being in Atlanta, I work with a lot of people, and then they're just, you know, they might have not have been on their phone then, but they're always on their phone now.
Right.
So I think it's just anybody given that lifestyle and given the American lifestyle would probably act in the same way.
Okay, real fine. So you are doing your portrait work now, and you will shortly, with the beginning of the school year, start doing your school portraits and that sort of thing. And does that leave you a lot of time for your other things? You mentioned you have a book coming out sometime in the undefined future. I presume that you're still doing a bit of music.
We have a ton of projects coming out. So right now I'm in the busiest part of our season, where we have about 3 or 4 weeks left, where it's just kind of chaos. And then after the chaos, you kind of have to file everything. And then so you're busy in a different way. But then after that, I have an album I already finished writing, and I've recorded it. I just need to go back and mix it and master it. And then so that's a solo album that I've been working on for probably about a year now. And then I have another album that's already mixed and mastered. I just haven't released it yet. And that's for the Choir 9, where it's actually Peter Mavrogiordis, who we brought up earlier, and Katie. So I have a female singer I'm bringing in. And then so that album is done. I just haven't had the right time to promote it and get everybody together. So
An awful lot to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So solo project, that one, I'm hoping to have that one done in a few weeks. And then I'm working on a book where I'm about 3/4 of the way done now, and I know how I'm going to end it. I just need the time to write it, and actually that's a project my dad developed, or is in the process of developing, a video game, and he needed a backstory for how the character came to be in the video game, and then I kind of took that and ran with it, and then now it's a whole novel, you know, based on his ideas for this reality that he has in his book, this world that he created.
Okay, your dad then does this sort of thing as well.
It's his first venture, but yeah, I think I've it's his first venture doing the video. He always has great ideas, but this is the first one he's putting into action. I guess I would say
great.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, he's always been recording music. He doesn't do a whole lot of recording or anything now, but you know, he was in a band when he was in his early 20s and put out a lot of music, and then now he is a CRNA, so he's always in the hospital working, so he doesn't have as much time to do that.
Yeah. And that's a very absorbing job.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Do you, how do you balance that? And the reason I'm asking is this. I know lots of people who write books, come out with albums, paint pictures, and so forth. And that is very satisfying for them. And then once the picture or the book or whatever is finished, then they have to market it.
Yeah, that's the worst part.
There are lots of people who get discouraged by that whole thing. How do you How do you balance that, or do you balance it, or have you found your way with that yet, the marketing angle?
Yeah, I think with the Savannah Blue, it kind of marketed itself, which I was lucky. I didn't have to put hardly any effort into. I mean, I put a few posts on Facebook here and there, and I got a great response. So I haven't had to do a whole lot with that, which was also, I knew when I wrote it that I could probably already have a community of people or readers ready to read it. So I didn't tell anybody about it. I just kind of put it out on Facebook, and then it kind of spread pretty fast that way. As far as music goes, I struggle a lot with the marketing part, and I get kind of burnt out because you put so much effort into a project, and then when you finally finish it, then not that you have self-doubt. I don't know. I just have a different personality for that, where I like creating things, but I can't put my face on a camera and talk about it and, you know, do things that you have to do. And I know a lot of people that are really great at that, where they can promote their music and video themselves talking about it and doing things.
Right.
And I know that's what you have to do. I think is video is the key to promotion now. That's how the algorithms work, and they can kind of cater towards video, especially first-person people talking about what projects they're working on. So I will make myself do that for these next projects coming up, and I've already made a few videos for my music coming out. But yeah, that's the worst part about it.
It's frequently, well, let's call it less rewarding than doing the project itself.
Yeah, yes, it's the opposite.
Well, okay. We should mention that if people want to get themselves a copy of Savannah Blue or of Church on Fire. Both are available on Amazon and other
So you can either
online.
Either order them through the website, but Amazon is the best place to go through, because you can get it cheaper and sent directly. It's on Prime too, so it'll come to your house probably in a day or two.
Okay.
Which is great.
Have you started to... You wrote quite extensively on your high school experience, and you've talked a bit about your college experience. Mm-hmm. And you're in the midst of doing a whole bunch of things now. Are you recording those things? Is this phase of life going to be another book down the line? Are you recording all of this?
I'm not necessarily documenting it right now. I wouldn't say like I'm actively documenting or journaling or anything like that. I don't know. I do think this phase of life, it's easier to look to the past and then see the things that are funny, or that, you know, it's kind of hard in the moment to actually understand, you know, what's important as you're doing.
Right,
you know,
right,
and obviously,
right,
you know what's important to you at the moment, but what becomes that theme of this era of your life, I don't know yet. So.
But a lot of people write down incidents and ideas, and they have mm-hmm. commonplace book where they pick up ideas that they like and that until it all sort of coalesces into an idea of for a book or something.
Definitely. I'm always writing down experiences and great conversations that I have, you know, anything like that, and kind of just collecting those and just, you know, waiting for the right time to use them.
Terrific. Well, Harrison, it's been lovely having you here. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much.
As you keep on developing things, I hope you will consider coming back. And
I would love to come back, and it's been a great time, so thank you for having me on.
Well, great. Good to have you.